T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
The Bernstein and McKnight Show.
And the pitch by Gant. Bodie bounces one to short. DeYoung gloves it, throws to first. And the Cardinals have swept the series. Bodie bounces out to short. St. Louis sweeps all three. The final today, Cardinals 2, Cubs 1.
Middays on the Score.
Let's talk about these struggling and recently disappointing Cubs here on the Bernstein and McKnight Show with Rich Campbell in today. The top of the hour is brought to you by the Chicago Wolves. Nothing beats championship hockey. Your Chicago Wolves are tied at one game apiece with the Charlotte Checkers in the Calder Cup Finals. The Wolves host Charlotte this Wednesday, Thursday, and Saturday at Allstate Arena. For playoff information, visit ChicagoWolves.com. Jordan Bastian is on Twitter at ML Bastian. He is the Cubs reporter for MLB.com, and he joins us on the Alpamonte Ford Hotline. Alpamonte Ford, 500 new and used vehicles to choose from. Jordan, how are you?
I'm good. How are you guys doing today?
All right, but it's very difficult to consume Cubs baseball when they're doing what they have done all too often, and their best players in big situations become unable to hit like they usually hit. What's wrong?
Yeah, you know, this has a real familiar feel as that first week, 10 days of the season where, you know, the pitching was doing its part, other than the bullpen had some struggles back then. Dealing with that still a little now, too. But the offense kind of, just in one of those funks, especially with runners in scoring position. You know, one way that Joe Maddon kind of phrased it is, lately it seems like they're trending towards more of the new traditional methods, which kind of means that three true outcome, you know, reliance on home runs, increased strikeout rate, you know, drawing some walks but not seeing much come of it. We saw that in the last game in St. Louis. They drew a surplus of walks against Adam Wainwright, and, you know, nothing came out of it. So he wants to get them back to that thinking up the middle of the field, that opposite field approach, which was, you know, they were utilizing that very well for much of the season until this recent stretch here. They were one of the baseball's best going the opposite way, especially in terms of slugging percentage and things like that. But yeah, this last road trip, you know, there's been some of those regression back to some of those ugly trends, and I think they got to get back to, going the other way, in-game adjustments and cutting down on the strikeouts and things like that.
Hey, Jordan, what did you make of Javier Baez's 0-for-4 yesterday, and how much do you feel like the heel is impacting him at the plate?
Yeah, it's interesting because when you talk to him or you talk to Maddon, they say that the heel is not impacting him offensively. You know, they said the big issue is his lateral movement. You know, that's why there was some discussion about, hey, maybe they should play him at third base for a little bit. Obviously, Baez talked his way into going back to shortstop in that last game in St. Louis. But offensively, everyone says it's not an issue. But if you look at the game logs and you look at his swinging strike rate and you look at his overall production from the day that he injured that heel, it looks like something's going on there. So again, you can go on what they're saying, and then you can go on what the numbers are saying, and the numbers would seem to indicate that there's some sort of impact there. I think, but this is one of those delicate balances that a manager has too, when you got your star player saying, I feel good, I'm fine, I'm good enough to play, put me out there. And you got the medical staff saying, you know, he's good enough to play through this. This isn't like a debilitating injury, but also you have to figure out how do you manage it to make sure this isn't something that lasts, you know, for weeks or months, or just continues to persist and hinder him, because he is one of your top players. So that's where you saw them try to manage it with DH stints in Houston, move him over to third, give him a day off here and there. You know, they're trying to figure out a way to manage this, to give him the rest, to let that thing heal. Because it's just one of those not serious injuries, but nagging injuries that you don't want to grow into something larger.
Going to continue, Carlos Gonzalez recently acquired, hit a home run down with the Iowa Cubs, is scheduled to join the team. I imagine my guess would be that Jim Odusi would be DFA'd to make room for him. What's going to be the plan? What's the point of having him here, and how is he going to be used?
Yeah, I think there's a couple layers to this signing. First of all, it's kind of a no-risk situation where this guy, I don't think you would anticipate him stepping in and becoming like a focal point of the team. This is the last spot on the bench you're talking about. This is a guy that kind of can come in. He has a track record. Maybe he can help out against right-handed pitching. Perhaps what was going on in Cleveland, you know, there's nowhere to go but up potentially in terms of the production standpoint. The other layers to it are this buys the Cubs more time to properly monitor Ian Happ's progress within his at-bats. I mean, you can look at the numbers the Cubs are looking at, the approach within each at-bat. You know, is he accomplishing the type of approach goals that they want to see? And it allows them to, you know, if something were to happen at the big league level, you have Carlos Gonzalez there. It gives you that extra layer where you don't have to rush Ian Happ back to the big leagues before you think it's his time. The other thing is potentially, we saw Chris Bryant in the outfield in that last game in St. Louis again, but a lot of fans kind of have trepidation over putting him back in the outfield and wanting to keep him more at third after what happened with him and Hayward a week ago. Well, maybe having Gonzalez as another corner option against right-handed pitching keeps Bryant at third a little more. And then the other element of all of this is that there's still no time frame for Ben Zobrist, if he's coming back at all. And so without him in that major league mix, Carlos Gonzalez kind of helps along that regard. This spot was held by Mark Zagunas on the bench for the first, you know, couple months of the season. Now Zagunas can stay in AAA and get regular at-bats and continue his development. So a lot of layers to this one, but it's, again, this is a guy with a track record, and maybe he can kind of incrementally upgrade some of the things that's been going on with the offense.
Jordan, why do you think the Cubs had such trouble yesterday with Adam Wainwright? And we've talked on the show earlier today about the hittable stuff that they saw throughout the lineup yesterday. Why do you think Wainwright was able to keep them quiet?
Yeah, I mean, that was an interesting one. I think, you know, that's kind of what I wrote for my story last night on the site, was looking at what Wainwright was doing. He was going a lot of curveballs away to the lefties. He was going a lot of stuff that moved away from the righties, cutter heavy. And really, when you broke down the plot points of his pitches, he almost totally avoided the upper third of the strike zone, and he kept doing it throughout the whole game. There's changes in the sequencing, but the approach was very similar through that 8-inning, 126-pitch outing, which you don't see guys throw that many pitches. And this is a guy that's throwing about a mile and a half on average below the MLB average for four-seam fastballs. So what I took out of that outing and that offensive sort of shortcoming for the Cubs was this was a prime example of a lack of in-game adjustment. And I think that's something that Maddon has talked about over the last week is, hey, they got to make better adjustments in-game. You know, and we've seen that in the past, even this season, when the Cubs were going really well offensively. You'd be quiet the first time through the order, and then you'd get through that second or third time, and all of a sudden you'd have, to use Maddon's phrasing again, kind of a swarming inning of guys going the other way or making the adjustment and moving runners and drawing walks and kind of seeing this multifaceted approach. And that moment never came against Wainwright, and I think that was sort of perplexing. And those outings can be frustrating for hitters. It's like if you talk to hitters on the other side when they face Kyle Hendricks, they walk back to the dugout going, how did I not hit that guy? You know, and I think that's kind of what we saw throughout that game.
Ken Rosenthal is very good at what he does, and he reported over the weekend that the Cubs saving money with Ben Zobrist not here and not being paid could influence their ability or desire to make an offer to Craig Kimbrell after the draft is over and there's no longer the attachment of compensatory draft pick forfeiture there. Where are you after Joe Maddon's full-throated denial of that? Is there truth to it?
Well, I wouldn't say it was a full-throated denial by Maddon so much as it was Maddon saying he hasn't specifically talked to the front office about it. He said, hey, they're probably talking about it, but he hasn't had any conversations with them. It would be shocking if they weren't talking about it internally. You know, you potentially have this money that's kind of available because Zobrist is on the restricted list and the money's not going to him at that point. You also now, as of midnight last night, have no draft pick compensation for Craig Kimbrell or Dallas Keuchel for teams that are in on him as well. You know, so you're reaching this point where there's this clear need for bullpen help, and it's been a clear need since the offseason, and now you have one of the game's all-time elite closers becoming available at a discounted rate and without compensation. So I think doing due diligence on the Cubs' part makes 100% sense, and I think, of course, they're going to be doing that. What they have to weigh, what any team has to weigh in this situation, is how does this two-month layoff impact the type of production you're going to get when you're looking at Craig Kimbrell specifically? There was a velocity drop last year. You know, there was a walk rate increase, and now he hasn't been pitching competitively for the first 2 months of the season. And it's not like, okay, you sign Craig Kimbrell and he goes right into the bullpen. It might take 2 weeks. It might take 3 weeks for them to have a buildup, have a plan. And I think that's something that teams are weighing as well. So when, in regards to what Madden was saying, it was, hey, that's the front office's job. And from his perspective, he's focused on the team he has. And so he's real excited about getting Pedro Strop back. And that could be coming here in the next day or so. So I think that kind of is where Madden was coming from with those comments.
Jordan, when you put together those variables, though, from a Cubs perspective, how much sense do you feel like it makes for them to make a serious play for Kimbrell?
Yeah, I mean, it's made sense, again, since the offseason. I think that was one of the reasons why there was so much angst over that rough start to the season where, okay, it was a week, it was 10 days, but everyone was sort of hitting the panic button. But the panic button was being hit more than usual because the issues that were bubbling at the surface were sort of all predictable issues based on needs, based on the way last season went. And so I think there was more cause for alarm because it was like, hey, those things we thought that could go wrong are going wrong. And obviously they righted the ship for a while and rose to first place, and there's been a lot of good to this season, but there's still been some of these underlying red flags, and one of them has consistently been the bullpen. And the absence of Pedro Strop has exposed it further because now, you know, him being there really sort of helps things line up, helps lengthen it out, thickens the bullpen. And without him, it's caused sort of that closer by committee, you know, mixing and matching. And it's, yeah, okay, you get him back. That's great. It lengthens out again. But then what if something happens to him or somebody else? You know, then it thins out again. And so just looking at the Kimbrell situation, if you can get him at a discount, and if you think you're going to get a guy that is what he has been for his career or close to it, you know, then it just bumps everybody back another notch and just makes that bullpen look so much better. So I think it makes a ton of sense. And again, I would be shocked if the Cubs are not exploring that.
Jordan, what are you looking for from John Lester today?
Yeah, you know, I think with him, if you look at some of the location of his pitches in the recent outings with his cutter, I mean, it's all been location kind of based. When he was going really well, you know, missing off the plate or getting guys to chase and getting into those chase counts. Because when you kind of dissect the stuff, when you look at the velocity or you look at the movement, there really hasn't been much variance compared to when he had a 1.16 ERA through seven starts. So for me, it hasn't been about, oh man, the stuff's been that much worse. There's been this drop off. It's just been where he's been putting it or getting into counts where now he's got to go into the zone and guys are beating him. So I think it sounds pretty simple, but just kind of getting ahead and getting into those chase type situations and then hitting those spots. And I think Lester's been doing this for a long time. This is not a guy that when you have three rough outings, he's going to the pitching coach going, oh man, what do I need to change? What can I do? What tweak can I make? He's been through it before. It's just about going back to, again, getting ahead, getting guys into chase counts, and getting that weak contact.
Boys, thanks. Great stuff.
No problem. Anytime, guys.
That is Jordan Bastian of MLB.com, brought to you by Campland RV. Head on over to Campland RV for their 58th anniversary sale. Now through the end of June, find great deals on RVs and campers. Campland RV, RV buying made easy. Just a short drive off I-94 in northwest Indiana. I've got a round of golf for somebody in just a moment. It's at the top-rated Bog Golf Club in Saukville, Wisconsin. You've got to be listening if you want that opportunity. Also, something happened that was noticed before last night's Stanley Cup final game in St. Louis that's just kind of gross. And I want to get a ruling on this, see what's right, what's not right. And I'm hopeful that people still care enough somewhere, somehow.
I have no idea what you're after here, so I'm a impartial jury here.
Good. That's it, because I saw this. I'm like, oh, really? But somebody noticed something, and an alert Twitter user posted a picture to confirm it was what we thought we saw. I'll give you details on this next on The Score. The Bernstein and McKnight Show, broadcasting live from Smoke Daddy. It's our Xfinity Live broadcast. We are getting you ready for the game, the Cubs and the Angels, a 3:05 start. Lawrence Holmes will be here shortly to take you from noon to 2:30, and then it's Zach Zaidman's pregame show right into Cubs baseball. Rich Campbell's in for Connor McKnight today, and it is from Rich Campbell that I need a single-digit number.
4.
1, 2, 3, 4.
Caller 4 to the contest line. Got to be the contest line. 312-591-6700 wins a round of golf for two at the top-rated Bog Golf Club located in Saukville, Wisconsin. The Bog is one of Arnold Palmer's top 5 courses in the country. Visit golfthebog.com. So Saturday night is when the hockey game was. Saturday night in St. Louis. Thanks to the sharp-eyed observers who picked this out. The national anthem is being sung by a man named Charles Glenn, and the color guard is there with the flags behind him, and they are the uniformed color guard, the white gloves, the class A's, the hats, the whole thing, the robes striking. And there's the American flag, there's what I'm sure is the Missouri state flag, and there are other flags not to be determined, but on the end it is very clear that there is the logo of a major national rental car company.
I'd recognize that logo anywhere.
Yes, that's the idea. That's called branding.
Yes.
And that means they sold a flag in the color guard for the anthem as inventory.
Go Bears!
I want you to think about this and think how you is anyone left to care? Does anyone care? And I have said, too, that the pandering of the thank the troops moment, a lot of that stuff is lovely unless it's sponsored, unless you have sold it as inventory, unless you have taken, if it's really coming from a real place and the team wants to honor a soldier or honor someone who served, that's lovely. But when you say, hey, we can sell this, that's when it gets gross. First blush thought on this.
That's the exact word. That's gross. That's gross.
Selling,
you can see the rental car logo more clearly than the stars and stripes.
Correct.
In that photo you've got. And the photo you're working with is a screen cap from the telecast.
Now here's where I want you to picture the
That's bad.
Picture the Venn diagram in your head of person who thinks this is okay. Who thinks this is fine, this is just capitalism, this is cool, nobody gets hurt, it's just a flag, big deal. Is that person also in the same part of the diagram that includes you cannot kneel during the anthem to protest injustice?
It would seem to be mutually exclusive circles in that Venn diagram.
How sacred is your color guard? Yeah. How sacred is the presentation?
Oh,
I mean,
man,
it's bad enough with the giant field-sized flags and all this. When you get to flag code and what you should be doing and shouldn't be doing, and the same people who are angry with certain people also wearing some bastardized version of the flag as clothing or underpants or a bandana or whatever it is. But to sell, to say, hey, you with the uniform, wait, where are you on the totem pole? If you're the member of the color guard holding the sponsor flag.
Yeah, you've gone, what, country? There's probably the Missouri flag in there. There's probably whatever county. And then you're all the way down.
Yep.
And then, no, you're the rental car guy on the end.
Think about that. But, I mean, somebody is probably got promoted because they came up with this idea. Somebody probably was like, hey, here's something we can sell that we didn't sell before. Let's do it.
Yeah, that's warped.
Isn't it? And what I wonder, is it a television deal or is it a team deal or is it shared? Because this was on NBC Sportsnet, the national channel.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering, is the team selling it or is it TV ad space? Is this product placement where the network's making money?
At the risk of giving away the rental car company, they are a sponsor of the NHL.
Okay.
Very clearly that their ads are all
league level sponsors.
Yes, their ads are everywhere. So this goes high up the chain then. Right? I mean it's not just the St. Louis Blues.
So this is written in that at the Stanley Cup final, when in that shot and in the arena, your company will be represented.
Oh, man.
Right?
That kneeling for the anthem thing is totally the standard here.
Right? Everybody's going to be held to the same standard. If that's how you feel, you can't do that. It is sacrosanct. How dare you? You're not sufficiently nationalistic or patriotic. Well, then what do you think of this?
Your mind has to go to a place that I don't think mine's capable of going to there. If I was thinking, think of everything you could sell. Every single thing you could sell for a broadcast. Do you know how long it would take me to get to flag in the color guard?
Right?
Mine's just not wired.
The bottom of the hour is brought to you by Lakeside Bank. Shopping for a mortgage and maybe trusting hundreds of thousands of dollars to an online firm? Really? Use Lakeside Bank. Your own Lakeside mortgage banker will be with you every step of the way. When it comes to a mortgage, personal's best. Lakeside Bank, it's about time. The move is official. Carlos Gonzalez is a Chicago Cub. Jim Odusi has been designated for assignment. Carlos Gonzalez will bat fifth and play right field today.
Fifth?
Okay.
What's up there?
He's been bad at Major League Baseball for a while now. It's a great name. It's a three-time All-Star, a guy whose numbers were helped by playing in Colorado, but there it is. It's official. How does it make you feel as a Cub fan? 312-644-6767. But yeah, talking to Jordan Bastian too about just when the Cubs go through these constipated offensive stretches and the number of times that they fail in critical situations, it scratches a scab off that wound. We've seen it. We've seen it go bad for them, and it is a well-practiced feeling of discomfort that Cub fans come by honestly when failure in situations with runners in scoring position. Again, I don't want to get into the whole choke clutch debate, but wherever you are on the continuum of players unable to be their representative selves in more important situations, call it whatever you want. I'm not going to debate semantics on that. But it is a fact that the Cubs have this problem has bedeviled them.
Jordan, in the context of the offensive woes and overall, brought up an interesting contrast between an overall approach about going back up the middle, going away, versus the lack of an effective in-game adjustment. So an overall approach versus adjusting to what you're seeing during the game. And in these clutch situations or high leverage situations, you can't always adjust because you're seeing a pitcher for the first time. So there's some different dynamics there. But overall, it's to your point about different hitting coaches not being able to solve this or this having plagued them for an extended stretch where the sample size you would think would have regressed to a more favorable mean by now. That is probably worth considering, that the differences between an overall approach and then seeing something in game.
Yeah, you know, it's the fact that they're not adjusting in game. I think we kind of let that go when Jordan Bastian said that. You know what? That's not okay.
Yeah.
You have a hitting infrastructure. You have video and tablets and everything in the clubhouse at your disposal, not to mention league-wide numbers that say OPS against a pitcher goes up a measurable increment, or is supposed to, with every time through the order. That's in large part because you become inured to what the pitcher's doing and you're sharing information. You're talking to each other about what you're seeing up there. And I guess that's my bottom line on that is, if Joe is talking about a lack of in-game adjustments, what's wrong? Why aren't they happening, and who's responsible for them not happening?
Right. If they can come up with data, and they should be able to, in the middle of a game that says Adam Wainwright is avoiding the top third of the zone, even though he struck out Chris Bryant in the eighth inning on a pitch that was elevated, that if they can come away and say, hey, you've got to look bottom two-thirds of the zone, and you're looking to go to right field and back up the middle, you should be more successful. As long as you're hitting strikes, too. Another thing Joe Maddon said after the game was that they got to recalibrate their strike zone, their hitting zones, not swinging at pitches that are out of the zone. It's, you know, always a problem, a characteristic of a slumping team, but okay, there's your adjustment.
Well, the adjustment is walk acceptance, and they were doing that yesterday.
That's true.
But somebody like Javier Baez, I mean, and really, that sounds oversimplistic and reductive, but it is – that level of preternatural patience to say, all right, we've got the book on Javier Baez, and we don't want to throw him strikes. We don't have to throw him strikes. The only way you make that matter is if you walk every time.
Mm-hmm.
Really. I mean, there may be a time where you say, look, he's a run producer for us. It's the old Joey Votto debate. Remember, when at his peak, when Joey Votto was still Joey Votto, there were always those fans, you know, there'd be runners on first and second, and he'd walk. And it was still the right thing to do. It was still the right baseball play. But the counter argument was he should be trying to find a ball to hit because he's a, quote-unquote, run producer. It's your job to not be out.
Out, yeah.
And if everybody on your team walks every time, you score an infinite number of runs and the game never ends. So you take infinity runs.
Well, if
Avengers, infinity runs.
If you're getting junk balled, or you know what we said about Baez, that I think that was your stat that you'd looked up, that he's seeing the most pitches
outside
of the strike zone. Well, then you've got to see a lot of pitches because you got to get in favorable counts. And then you start seeing hittable pitches.
It's a great opportunity to drive up a starting pitcher's pitch count. You know, use it to your advantage. It's the jujitsu technique of use whatever the opponent is doing to hurt the opponent. And if they now know that the Cubs are getting themselves out and hitters know it, the way you adjust is just lay off. I don't care if there's two on and nobody out, or two on and two out. Take your walk, accept your walk, trust that your teammate is going to pick you up in the moment.
And the Cubs are at an interesting point in the schedule, just in their week, and this conversation is particularly important as they reset. I mean, you get to an end of a series, you get to an end of a road trip, it is time to reset. And the Cubs would have had an off day. Today's the makeup game against the Angels. But otherwise, a good time to reflect on some of these issues and get right at home.
We are getting some answers from people who know. The 815 says, I'm a former member of the Air Base Honor Guard. That flag should never be allowed in there. It is against U.S. military honor guard policy to have any other flag in the presentation of the colors. It's U.S. flag, state flag, and service flag. So that's
definitive.
That's from somebody who claims to know and is unhappy with that. And for everybody who's pointing out that the arena in which the Blues play is named after that company, so what? That doesn't entitle you to then do something quite that crass. I don't care. That's completely immaterial. It's true, but it also doesn't matter. That's not the issue. The issue is, have we crossed a line? And I'm glad there's at least one person here that still cares. One person that can still say, that's going too far. Selling a televisable and viewable position in the color guard for the national anthem should cross a line.
I was not at the game, but assume that at some point in some intermission, because every stadium in the country does this now, is that there is a standing ovation at some point for a serviceman or woman who is either a guest of the team at the game or is just at the game. And it would be interesting to hear that marketing department, whether it's the NHL marketing or St. Louis Blues, maybe rationalize the inclusion of that flag because, look, we honor our servicemen and women at other times during the game, whether they find a rationale that is equally warped and twisted to get to. Yeah. Just gross. Yeah, I don't like that.
Just joining us, the Cubs have officially selected the contract of outfielder Carlos Gonzalez from AAA Iowa. He is going to bat fifth today. He is in the lineup. Cargo is a Cub. I don't know where he ranks on that list of the fading former All-Stars who have tried to find second life with the Cubs, but sometimes it happens. Sometimes you get one of those guys that ends up good. I remember, it was actually the Cardinals. Years, I think it was 85, the year that they went to the World Series, won the World Series, right? Or did the Royals win? Yeah.
The Royals won. In 85.
Yeah, Royals won.
Yeah.
And they signed an aging Cesar Cedeno and just got gangbusters production out of him. I hope my memory is correct on that one. I remember Cesar Cedeno, people think, oh, he doesn't have it, and then just had a blistering period of time.
It only takes 3 weeks or something to a meaningful time in the schedule.
Lawrence Holmes is here. He is part of our Xfinity broadcast day at Smoke Daddy. Man, the food has just been phenomenal. This is one of those great breakfast items, that burnt ends hash that's covered in scrambled eggs. That's living right there. That's really all you need. But Lawrence is going to carry you up until 2:30, working a little overtime, to Zach Zaidman's pregame on your home for Cubs baseball. That game coming your way later on, right here on Sports Radio 670, The Score.
There's strike three. Off speed on the corner, one gone. My goodness, was he behind that fastball. Bowers was in the local for out number two. 1-2, it's been a pleasure. Bye-bye, Greg. He struck him out off speed, fluttering into Perez. Now that one was beautiful location, tailing toward the corner. Strike three and strikeout number six. Got him again. Little training effect. Back-to-back high fastballs. Seven strikeouts for Lucas. He struck him out with the changeup. Sheer focus from Giolito, 1-2. He struck him out. 97 to the fringe. He's from a Hollywood family. You can't really write this. Amazing.
I always see it appear in the cut sheet every day after Lucas Giolito pitches. It is the Lucas Giolito strikeout montage. That is looking like an ace. That is looking like when previously we thought maybe a four, then maybe a three. This is closer to 1-2 stuff here lately, certainly like a one. And every start, we're getting that strikeout montage because he's just clobbering people.
His walk montage, you just hear a cricket chirp.
Right. Did you see Scherzer yesterday, by the way?
No, I didn't, I saw it come across the bottom. I mean, when that guy is on, you could see a perfect game anytime he starts.
The best part was Dave Martinez was going to take him out after 100-some pitches, and he gets to the top of the dugout, and Scherzer looks over at him and goes, no! And he went right back down.
What, did he finish with 15 Ks?
Yep. We have some thank yous. I want to thank our guests today. Mike Zaleski, the author of SB 690, that is going to be signed by Governor Pritzker. He joined us to talk about that Herculean lift on the part of Illinois government to push through legalized sports betting and gambling expansion. Jordan Bastian joined us as well. Rich Wyatt was our engineer. Jay Zawoski, Rick Camp, Ray Diaz, the producers. Thanks to the Scorers promotions team as well. Huge thanks to Xfinity and Smoke Daddy, as always, for rolling out the red carpet for us, the fabulous hospitality, a really, really good place to be before a game, as it is filling in here outside on the porch on a great day for alfresco dining. Rich, it's been a fun couple of days.
Yeah, thanks for having me in. It's nice to get in with you guys and talk about a bunch of different sports that, unfortunately, I don't get a chance to dig into enough. But yeah, White Sox building something, Cubs, a lot of interest there. I'll tell you, you've covered enough games in your career to know that there's something about watching a ballpark come alive hours before a game that never gets old. It's like its own organic being.
Yeah,
and right now it's awake now.
It's always before. It's a inherently positive energy before you actually know the game outcome.
Yes. Right? Yeah. Right. Right. And you know that tens of thousands of people are going to stream through an area that, at one point, there's maybe one or two people.
And the area will suck all of their discretionary income out of them and make them very, very drunk. Lawrence Holmes is going to join us next, so keep it here. You got the score.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.